Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Stu McLaren, and I'm filling in for our regular host, Michelle Cachette, as she is finishing her battle with cancer, and she's doing a great job in her recovery, and we look forward to hearing from her soon. We are in a brand new studio, and I am here with you, Michael, in your new studio. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm loving you using this studio for the first time.
Totally. New digs, new setup. It's awesome.
Well, the cool thing is that we can control everything.
Yes.
Now, we're having a little bit of a challenge this time because it's the first time.
It's the first time.
So getting us mic'd up and getting the light coming through the windows right is
And we won't let people in on the behind the scenes that we're talking through tin cans to our producers upstairs.
we definitely got to do a Periscope thing on that later because people won't believe it.
It is hilarious. But new digs, and you've been working on this studio for quite some time.
Yep, about 10 months.
Yep.
And it's also my office.
Yes.
So when it's not a video studio, it's my office.
Multi-purpose.
I'm loving it. This is the world headquarters of intentional leadership.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm also looking forward to this season of the podcast.
Me too.
Because there's a lot of things that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about productivity. We're going to be talking about relationships within your family. We're going to be talking about leadership. There's so much that I'm looking forward to diving into, starting with this particular episode. And I want to dive right in and get right to the goods with this one. Now, this is all about overwhelm. And really, the fact of the matter is, we have all felt overwhelmed, whether it's in our business life, whether it's in our personal life, whether it's just in the season of life. You know,
yep,
I've got two
absolutely.
Young kids right now. So, you know, it's a lot busier than it was before kids.
And it never goes away.
Right.
Just so you know, I mean, it's a recurring theme in my life for sure. I was feeling a little overwhelmed as I got up this morning thinking about recording these podcast episodes. So it comes and goes, and you're going to have to deal with it no matter where you are in life.
And I know that you had an experience early in your career when you were working as a marketing director of a publishing company?
Yeah, it was a publishing company, right.
Okay. And you were feeling tremendously overwhelmed, and then you got an important piece of advice. Can you tell us about that? And
yeah, well, let me give you the context.
Okay.
So Gail and I, at one point, had 5 daughters under the ages of 10.
Which, I have 2 young kids. I don't know how you guys did that.
Well, the first clue was when we had more kids than hands. You know? And so we think, you know, how do we keep up with all these kids? Plus, as it turned out, that was the most demanding time in my career. You know, trying to make a name for myself, trying to make a mark, trying to advance, get promoted, all that stuff. And here I've got this big family and all the demands of home and all that stuff is happening at the same time. So it was right before a sales conference at this publishing company I was working for, and everything in the publishing world revolves around a sales conference. So everybody's feeling overwhelmed. Everybody feels like they can't keep up. And there's a hard deadline because you've got sales staff that are flying in from all over the country, actually all over the world.
Big production for the company.
Big production.
Yep.
And, you know, there's slideshows and, you know, performance and all that stuff.
A lot of investment, I would imagine.
A lot of investment. Big investment. And I was in charge of the whole sales conference.
Man.
And I was just feeling enormously overwhelmed, like kind of shut down.
Just like you were hiding from it?
No, it's just one weekend where I just thought, I don't know that I can do this.
Really?
You know, really doubting myself, wondering if I had what it took to pull it off. A lot of people looking to me for direction. So I kind of had to fake it, you know, and I couldn't let on my how I really felt to them.
So you were getting probably peppered with questions from your team.
Right.
Constantly, you know, being hit up with wanting answers for all these different things, plus dealing with the tasks that you were in charge of managing.
Plus emotionally, they're feeling overwhelmed.
Right.
So now I'm trying to reassure people that are feeling overwhelmed.
That it's okay.
That it's okay.
But you're feeling overwhelmed yourself.
I'm feeling overwhelmed too. So who's going to reassure me? So I went to a mentor, a guy that I really, really respected and had been hugely helpful to me in the past. And I said, look, I just need to know what to do. I'm not sure I've got what it takes. I'm not sure I've got the resources. You know, I'm about to freak out here. And I said, give me some advice. I need news I can use. And so he said to me, he said, let me just tell you something. Just do the next right thing. And I thought, really? But, and I kind of like.
You were looking for something huge, you know, that you'd never heard before.
Yeah.
but it really came down to something
like, especially being the kind of the geek that I am, I thought, you know, do you have some kind of project management software or something that'll kind of help me manage this and make this feeling go away? And he said, no. He said, you just need to do the next right thing. Mm. He said, you know the next right thing. Just do that and forget everything else. It'll take care of itself. It's going to be okay.
Huh.
And he was exactly right. And every time I get in these overwhelming situations, even today, I thought, well, I just need to do the next right thing. I don't need to overthink this. I need to do the next right thing. So it was great advice.
That is great advice. And it's practical that all of us can use that. You know, when we are dealing with the overwhelm, just focusing on that next best thing. And what I want to do here is I want to put this philosophy into practice.
Okay.
And so I know you have three steps that we can use to help us escape the overwhelm and just get moving again.
Yeah.
So let's dive into those. What's step number one?
Well, and that's the key thing, is to get moving. Because when you do feel overwhelmed, the tendency is to be stuck.
Mm.
And it's like you're a sailboat out in the ocean, and the wind isn't blowing, and your sails are flapping in the wind, and you just need to start getting some momentum.
And really, the momentum is really what helps us, you know, succeed. Because once you got totally. Momentum on your side, you have the confidence and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, John Maxwell talks about the big mo, you know. Yeah. And when you've got it, it's easy to keep it. But when you don't have it, it's hard to start it up from scratch.
Right.
So step number one is to forget about the ultimate outcome. And for me, and for people who have my particular personality type, on the Strength Finders, futuristic is one of my top five. Is that one of your top five?
Yep, it's number three for me.
Okay, so let's see if you've got this too. So it's really easy for me to be in the future and to be thinking about all kinds of scenarios, running scenarios in my head. And usually when I feel overwhelmed, it's the worst case scenarios.
Right.
So I'm thinking of everything that can go wrong. And I coach people. I tell them not to do this, but you know, I struggle with it myself. And so here I am thinking about all the worst things that could happen. But what I'm saying is the most important thing, when you catch yourself doing that, is forget about the ultimate outcome.
Right.
Because the truth is, when you get down the road, 90% of what you worried about doesn't happen or is already taken care of. And it's just a lot of wasted energy and brain power on something that's not going
to
happen.
And we can all relate to that. Yeah. All, you know, every one of us listening have gone to the worst case scenario at some point, you know, and it just creates more overwhelm, more stress, more stuckness, if you will, that you were talking about. And it's really difficult to create any momentum after that.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to turn the tables. Can you think of a time recently when you went to that worst case scenario?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So when I sold my software company, I went to worst case scenario. So here I was thinking, okay, we had built up a successful company and I was very proud of that. And I had all this self-doubt when it came time, when I had the thought of selling it. You know, what if this is a one-hit wonder? What if I'm never going to be able to recreate that kind of success? What if now, if I can't recreate it, my reputation just goes, you know, in the toilet? And then if that goes in the toilet, then what am I going to do?
I'll be forgotten.
I'll be forgotten. I won't be able to, you know, have my own business. I'm going to have to go back to like the corporate world. I've never even had a real job. How am I? Nobody's going to pick me up. And then you overlay that with the pressures of, but I got a young family. Mm-hmm. You know, I have added responsibility now that I can't, you know, fail, you know? And so, yeah, I went there. But fortunately for me, my number one trait on the Strengths Finders test is positivity.
I love that.
So it quickly counters that. And I was able to come out of that. But you still go down that road.
Yeah. And see, I don't have that strength.
Mm.
So fortunately, I'm married to somebody whose number one strength is positivity. So she's sometimes, like a good therapist, kind of talks me off the ledge.
Yeah.
But so I go to that really dark place. And I remember Stephen Covey talked about this idea of the circle of concern and the circle of influence. Have you ever heard him talk about
that? I have. Yeah.
You know, so you watch the news and you get all freaked out about the future. In fact, I was talking to a friend the other day who was all concerned. And at this point, we're recording this. We're in the middle of the Greek debt crisis.
Yep.
And he was wondering, would that cascade into our economy? And would it create another recession? And would he be out of work? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like one domino after another. And I said to him at one point, I just said, look, that's your circle of concern. Mm. You know, you can be concerned about it. You can be anxious. You can be worried. But you really don't have any influence.
Right.
I mean, really. I mean, you could write a letter to the president or something, I don't know, but you really don't have much influence. And I think that making that distinction is really important because there are a lot of things where we don't have influence and we don't need to worry about those things. And a lot of times the ultimate outcome is not totally inside of our control.
Right. And that when you start to pretend that you have control over all of these things, it creates even more overwhelm, more stress.
And life has a way of reminding that you're not in total control.
Right.
And I think a lot of life is an opportunity for us to become resilient and to be able to develop our character. And that usually happens when things we don't expect show up. So there's a sense in which all this stuff is good.
Yeah.
You know, even when it's stuff that threatens to overwhelm us because it builds our capacity. I mean, think of the last time you were at the gym. I don't know about you, but I've got a trainer that's tough.
Yeah, I have a trainer that beats me up too.
Yeah, and so he takes me right to the edge.
Yeah.
When I feel like I can't do it, but he usually has a better sense of what I can do than what I think.
I've also found, you know, just as an aside, that is an amazing exercise in and of itself, is having somebody who knows you better than yourself to really bring you to that limit. And that outside accountability helps you gain momentum.
Yeah. And to know your breaking point. And it's usually more than we think. And the only way you build muscle is to go beyond your current comfort level, to push beyond what you think your capability is, to where, and you know, physiologically, those muscles have the micro tears and all that, and then they heal, making you stronger.
Right.
So there's a sense in which emotionally that happens, spiritually that happens, character-wise that happens too. So I'm saying in this first step, forget about the ultimate outcome.
So forget about the ultimate outcome, just focus on the next step.
That's exactly right.
Well, we've got two more steps that we're going to be talking about with Michael to help you get beyond that overwhelm. We're going to be getting to those in just a minute.
If you're like most members of my audience, you're committed to winning at work and succeeding in life. But the truth is, you struggle with finding enough time to do it all. And that's exactly why I wrote my new ebook, Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, 4 Proven Strategies for Creating More Margin for the Things That Matter Most. You can't buy Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, but you can get it for free by subscribing to my free email newsletter. My email newsletter notifies you whenever I've posted fresh content to my blog, so you don't always have to visit my blog to stay up to date. To get your free copy of the Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week ebook, visit michaelhyatt.com and enter your name and email address into the form on the page. If you're tired of feeling like there's never enough time to get it all done, don't miss your chance to discover how to reclaim the margin you deserve. Sign up at michaelhyatt.com.
And we are back, and we're talking about how to regain momentum when you are feeling overwhelmed. Michael is taking us through 3 steps. We've covered 1 thus far, which is forget about the ultimate outcome. What's step number 2?
Yeah, step number 2 is to focus on the next right action. And this was the essence of what my friend was saying. But the first step kind of gives you the context.
Yep.
This step really brings you to the core of the matter, which is to take the next right action. And what I found, Stu, is that when you take action, especially for people that live in their head a lot of times, like sometimes I can tend to do, it dissipates the fear and the uncertainty and the doubt. So that if I can focus on taking action, that's within my realm of control, right?
Yep.
So if all I'm doing is thinking about all the stuff that could happen that's outside of my control, that suddenly makes me a victim.
Hmm. You know, I have, when I think about that taking the next action, I get taken back to when I was starting my career as a motivational speaker for high school and college students. And I remember when I made that decision that that was the direction I wanted to go, and I gave up my opportunity to go down the corporate road. My parents said, okay, fine, we'll support you for a year. After that, you're on your own. So I had basically a deadline. And I thought to myself, what do I do? How do I start this career? I had no idea. But I was doing this instinctively. And the next action for me was to call my high school that I went to and explain to them, hey, I'm giving talks. You know, I'd love to give one for free. In exchange, if I do a good job, that you refer me to some
That's
other
great.
Schools. And that was the action that got the ball rolling. I was definitely in my head before that, thinking about like, the business side of it and how do I market myself and all that kind of stuff. But the reality was that next action was the thing that really got the ball moving, even just a little bit, and got things going. And so it's so important to take that next action.
Yeah, and I think there's some kinds of personalities that feel like they've got to get it all figured out. And I find that I rarely have it figured out. And even if I think I know where it's all going and what the outcome's going to be, the path to that is going to be very different than what I imagined. So all that time spent over-planning, I'm not against planning, but over-planning can really be a fancy way to procrastinate. You know?
Yeah.
Like totally. we've got a mutual friend of ours. We were just talking about him before this episode began. And we were talking about the fact that we were wondering if he was going to make headway in this new venture.
Yep.
Because he really is living in his head and he's got to get it all figured out. And he doesn't want to take any action until he does. And he's stuck.
Right.
But one of the fastest ways to develop momentum is to start.
Yeah, to just get going. Because you learn so much more by starting. You know, even when I'm providing consulting advice for people that are building memberships and communities, that's one of the things that I tell them is you're never going to get it perfect because it's going to change once you actually start and get people in your membership. It's the same thing. You know, like you never know exactly how it's going to be, but you're going to learn so much just by getting started. The whole lean startup method is really built on this whole premise too.
And I think if you're going to be a leader or if you're going to be an entrepreneur, or if you're going to be successful in any area of your life, you've got to develop kind of a predisposition toward action.
Right.
You know, or a bias toward action.
Yep.
I think sometimes thinking and planning is just overrated. Right. And I've come up, and you probably have too, with complex action plans. And they rarely work themselves out in reality. In fact, I was just reading a novel this weekend I was telling you about earlier, this book called The Martian. And this guy's stuck on Mars.
Yeah.
And he's trying to figure out how to get off Mars, which is, you know, no small thing. I would have been dead. But he's figured it out. And he's doing one thing after another. But he has to develop this bias toward action. Because sitting there thinking about it, he's exhausting his air supply. He's exhausting his food supply. He's got to take action.
Got to do something.
And the same thing is true for us.
Okay. So we've covered two steps to help us gain momentum and beat overwhelm. First, forget about the ultimate outcome. Number two, focus on the next right action. What's the third step?
Third one is do something now. You know, anything now is better than something later.
Got it.
And a lot of times people feel like, well, if I do something now, I might make a mistake. And I think that hangs up a lot of people too. So what? I mean, you know, if you're performing brain surgery, you know, I'd rather you take your time and get it right. Yeah. But anything less than that, again, it's just a way to procrastinate. So find something you can do now. Do you remember when we were sitting in the Inner Circle Mastermind and we were talking about a concept? I don't remember what it was. But one of the guys went out on the break and made a phone call and put into operation what we'd been talking about.
I was blown away, you know, and I so admire people who are that fast at taking action. And I also love people who hold me accountable to take action. Yeah. You know, for example, we recently had a board meeting for our charity and we were discussing a bunch of issues. And one of the big ones was hiring an operations manager, somebody to help us run the day-to-day of the charity. And one of our board of directors, his mutual friend, Braden, he said, okay, so we've identified this. And he said, what's the next action that you're going to take on this? And we were thinking, well, we should probably create a job description. He's like, great. And when are you going to have that done by?
Yeah.
And we're like, by the end of the month. He's like, perfect. So make sure you submit that to all of us by the end of the month. And then from there, we can, you know, hire the person, you know, put it out there and hire the person, all that kind of stuff. But holding me accountable or us accountable to have that next action in place, because knowing that it creates the momentum we need to get that job filled.
That's the key thing. When you get started and you start taking action and you start doing it now, the sooner you're going to get to the destination that you ultimately want to get to.
And so this is important because this is different than step number two, which is focus on the next right action. That's just identifying what that action is going to be, but you actually got to do it.
You actually got to do it. And it's usually as simple as a phone call, an email, some simple, discreet action that you can take now. I remember several years ago, I was going through a really significant IRS audit.
Hmm.
And I remember getting a notice that I had an outrageous amount of money to pay.
Hmm.
And I felt overwhelmed. And so I stewed on it overnight, and it didn't get better, shockingly. You know, I went to the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it probably got worse.
I couldn't sleep, whatever. So finally, Gail says to me, she says, call your accountant.
Right.
Okay, so that's a little simple, discreet action. And I said, okay, well, I'll do that this afternoon. She said, no, I mean, like now. Call the accountant. So I called him, and he said, well, that's totally a mistake. That can't possibly be right. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it.
Wow.
And he did. So here I had an entire sleepless night.
Right.
Because I'm in my head. I'm thinking about the ultimate outcome. Maybe I had identified the next right action, but I wasn't doing anything now.
Right.
And I could have gotten momentum and gotten rid of that just by taking action, which is what I ultimately did.
Well, as we wrap this episode up, I want to kind of put a bow on it for people. And because there are many pitfalls that keep us stuck and overwhelmed. And I want to get your thoughts about how to avoid those pitfalls. So can you talk to us about that? What tips would you have for us to avoid pitfalls that typically keep us stuck?
Well, Stu, these are correlated to the steps that I gave earlier, but the first one would be overthinking and underacting. That's, you know, hopefully we've made that abundantly clear, but I think that's really easy to fall into that trap. And you just need to ask yourself, is that a pattern of behavior for you?
Especially if you're somebody that likes to research, is very analytical and thinking about all the different options, that's definitely a danger zone for you with this in terms of
overall. Definitely. And, you know, we've been inside of my organization talking about the Kolbe profile a lot.
Yep.
And there are certain profiles that they like to initiate action by either research. And that's not my highest profile, but it's my second highest. Or people that are high on follow through. And so they like to plan and design and all of that. It's all good. It all has its place.
Yep.
But it can get you stuck in this situation. Mm. And so to overthink it and underact, I say even if you're going to plan, take some action now and then go about your planning, you know, and adjusting all along.
And I remember even you sharing a story about when you were writing your most recent book, your next action was just to start with, you know, just creating file documents for just the chapters. And that was it. You weren't, you know, writing anything. You were just creating the outline for things.
Yeah, I'll tell you when I was, in fact, I'll go back further than that. When I was writing my first book, so I get a contract for the book. They pay me a modest advance. I was real excited for about a minute. And then I thought, I got to write this sucker. And it felt unbelievably overwhelming. First, I'd never written a book before.
Yeah.
And that seemed incredibly daunting. To write a book that was, in this case, 75,000 words.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It was a lot. And so I just chunked it down and I said, okay, I'm going to create, and this is where I learned this tip, I'm just going to create blank Word documents, one for each chapter, but that'll at least get the momentum. And then from there, I created what we call in the publishing world, the front matter, you know, the copyright page, the title page, just anything to get a sense of momentum. And then I went to each of the chapters and I filled in the chapter title. And so I just wanted to complete what was easy and what I could do now to get a sense of momentum.
I remember you sharing that story before and I loved it because you also talked about you didn't write the chapters in order.
That's right.
You wrote the chapters that were easiest, which again helps you create more momentum. So I love that.
And I still use that technique to this day. The last book I wrote, a book which will be out next year, I did the same thing. I said, okay, what's going to be the easiest chapter? What's the one I have the most energy and excitement around? I'm going to write that one first.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to write the next easiest one so that by the time I get to that really, really, really difficult one, I've got the momentum that can carry me through. And people often do the exact opposite. They say, well, I want to eat my peas before I try to get dessert. You know, I want to do the hard task first and then never get to it because they don't have enough momentum to break through those barriers of resistance to get it done.
And this really can be used in all areas of business and life and so forth. Because another good example of this, when we were looking for affiliate partners for a most recent promotion, we started by talking to the people who we had the deepest connection with first, the best relationship first, because that we knew we'd probably get a yes.
Yep.
And that would create the momentum that would then lead to more yeses down the road.
And it also builds your confidence.
Yeah.
So like I do the same thing with endorsements. When I try to get endorsements for a book, I go to the guys that I absolutely know owe me a favor or aren't going to say no, because then it builds my confidence. Then I can go to that big, scary famous author that I don't want to ask because now I've got a few under my belt.
Yeah.
You know? So it helps my confidence. So that first pitfall really is overthinking and underacting.
Got it. Okay. So what's the second pitfall?
Second one is indulging in comparisons.
And this is easy to do.
Oh, so you start comparing yourself to people who are in easier situations.
Right.
And you begin to envy them or just hate them, you know, because I wish I could be in that person's situation. Everything seems to come so easy to them. But here's the problem, Stu. Too often, and this isn't original with me, I don't know who said it, I'd give them credit if I could think of it, but too often we compare our backstage to their front stage.
Yeah, I first heard this concept from Jeff Walker.
Oh, okay.
But I think, I'm not sure if it was his original thought or probably, or...
Let's give him credit.
Jeff, way to go.
Yeah, so you're looking at their front stage where the performance is going on and you're thinking, that's so easy. You know, they're singing and dancing and pulling this thing off and it's amazing. And what you don't see is all the chaos backstage.
Right.
And what you are very aware of is the chaos backstage in your own world.
Yeah.
And I mean, just like doing this podcast, we know all that goes into this and everything crazy that happens leading into it.
Yeah.
But people watch this and go, oh my gosh.
Flip a couple cameras on and talk.
Yeah, exactly. You know, those guys never make any mistakes. They don't see that we had to restart this second segment.
Yeah.
You know, so comparison can really hurt you when you're trying to get momentum and when you're trying to overcome your overwhelm.
And I think the important distinction there is comparing somebody else's front stage, which is what appears to the public, to your backstage, which is the chaos that's happening behind the scenes in your own life. And that's really where the contrast can happen, and that can be dangerous.
Well, here's the dirty little secret. Everybody has a backstage.
Yeah.
And everybody's backstage is chaotic. You know, and
true.
And I think kind of our Facebook culture and social media makes it look different than that because everybody posts on Facebook the best stuff.
Yeah,
right? That's the front stage.
Yeah.
And you don't see the chaos backstage.
Right.
You know, when the kids need their diapers changed and husband and wife are fighting and, you know, the potatoes are burning on the oven, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, so number one pitfall, overthinking and underacting. Number two, indulging in comparisons. What's the third pitfall?
The third one is allowing self-doubt to dampen your confidence. Mm. And the truth is that usually when we're beginning any new thing, we haven't done it enough to build confidence.
Right.
So there's going to be some fear, some uncertainty and doubt. That's normal. The thing that separates the men from the boys, so to speak, or the women from the girls, so to speak, is that they're able to act in spite of their fear. Hmm. So to be able to be courageous doesn't mean that you feel no fear. It means that you're willing to take an action even though you feel fear. So for example, this morning, I was coming out here to do these episodes and Gail said to me, she said, how do you feel? And I said, I feel nervous. And she said, really? You know, and I've done this a lot of times.
Yeah, this is season number five.
Season number five. Yeah, and the first season was like 100 episodes. So, but I said, yeah. I said, but that's a good thing because that's how my body prepares itself for peak performance. And that's kind of like a mantra that I say whenever I take the stage when I'm speaking and I feel nervous. I don't resent it, but I kind of welcome it as a friend because I realize that it helps me. And so I hope I never lose that because it keeps me sharp and alert and makes me do my homework.
Yeah, so it's something that you actually look forward to in a way because then you know it's going to help prepare you.
Yeah, I'd rather be underconfident than overconfident.
Interesting.
Because if I'm underconfident, I'm going to prepare.
Right.
I'm going to practice. I'm going to make sure I'm on top of my game and I'm alert. I think that the worst things in my business for sure and probably in my personal life have happened when I got overconfident.
It's interesting. Last night, I was attending a Pan Am Games with my father, and we were watching a soccer game, and it was Brazil versus Canada.
Okay.
Canada, even though it's my home country, we're not a good soccer nation. Brazil, one of the best soccer nations in the world. And you could see it when they came on the field. In the first 10 minutes, Canada was very tentative, and Brazil was all over them. They scored in the first, I think it was like the first 7 minutes. And you could see like this air of confidence grow on Brazil, and they started to get cocky, and they started like playing with the ball. They were doing all these fancy things, trying to, and it just wasn't working. And then all of a sudden, Canada, we were on home turf. They started to build momentum, and the crowd started to get behind them. And then Canada scored, and you could see the panic in Brazil. And it was almost as though they came into the game overconfident. you know, and they didn't take Canada seriously, which I get for the most part. I mean, we're not a good soccer nation, but it was fascinating to see how the momentum of the game totally shift. And then in the second half, it was like their coach had like lit a fire under their butt.
That's
and
great.
Said, listen, we can't afford to lose this game. And then you saw the best of Brazil come out after that. And Canada got our, we got our butt kicked. But it was a moment in time during that game when that overconfidence really played a part. And that could have been damaging to them.
Yeah.
You know, if Canada had scored another goal, they could have just totally shelled up and won that game. And that would have been devastating for Brazil.
Yeah, absolutely would have. So yeah. Overconfidence could really hurt you. But I think understanding the nature of feelings is that they usually follow actions.
Right.
You know, it's true when you're loving your wife.
Yeah.
You know, or loving your spouse. You don't always feel loving, but when you act in a loving way, the feelings follow. And I think the same thing is true here.
Got it. So as we're wrapping up here, Michael, we just talked about pitfalls that can keep us stuck. One, overthinking and underacting. Number two, indulging in comparisons. And three, allowing self-doubt to dampen our confidence. If you've enjoyed today's episode, I want to encourage you to go over to michaelhyatt.com to get the full show notes. Plus, if you want to see Michael's brand new studio, then you want to go over and check out the video option as well, and you'll be able to see us here in action. Also, can you do us a quick favor and just jump over to iTunes? It'll take you 30 seconds to rate this podcast. And the reason that's important is because it helps us get this show in front of more viewers and an audience just like you. So if you would take the time to do that, we'd be forever grateful. As we wind down here, Michael, I want to hand it over to you for any final thoughts.
Yeah, I would just circle right back to where I began and repeat the advice that my mentor gave me when I felt overwhelmed, and that is just do the next right thing. It's very simple, deceptively simple. But I think if people will do that, they'll find that they get unstuck, they'll begin to build momentum, and that feeling of overwhelm will dissipate.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And thank you for listening. And with that, I want to leave you with one final thought, and that is, until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.